to Hype, episode 54. My name is Selena, and I'm back this week with Pam, Marima, and Kyle. Yay! It's the old gang back together. I am not Andrew. Apparently, this is something that needs to be stated, according to last week's show. You guys did a great job. I say, like, I'm surprised. Thanks. Like, I was wondering.
Was say that like fine? A kindergarten teacher to someone who's, like, colored in really well. Like, you guys did a great job.
Gold star for you.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. You know, you're such a busy woman.
Of course. No, of course. I mean, it was when I wasn't on Hype, I listened to it, like, every week because it was, like, how I learned about fandom. It was fun being away for a week. And
what did you do while you were away, Selena?
Oh.
Like, what did you do fandom related while you were away?
What did I do fandom related? Do you know that I was stuck in the middle of a nowhere with an axe and a manual grass cutter working my way through like a massive overgrown garden? I actually...
So you were in the Hunger Games.
Pretty much. No, like, bloodthirsty children lurking in the trees, but otherwise that's pretty much what I felt like. But you know what? Actually, that's you do bring up a good point, because I was listening to audiobooks as I was... you know, mowing the lawn with my tiny little hand mower. And I finished Wild by Cheryl Strayed. So the nice little way to get that in there. It's a great audiobook. I don't know if you guys have watched the movie or read the book, but it's fantastic. And it fit my mood, because Wild...
And you were in the wild.
Yes, very good.
That totally derailed the intro we usually have planned, so I'll just quickly, before we move on to the actual How We Hype, I'll just really quickly state that Hype is, of course, hypeable.com's podcast for all things entertainment news and discussion. You can find us on hypeable.com, which is hypable.com. You can find us on Twitter at hypeablehype, on Instagram at /hypeablehype. And as always, we would like to ask you, if you have a spare moment, to leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. It's just a nice way to help other people discover the show and to spread the listener base and to get some more interesting feedback. So moving on now to our first segment, which is How We Hype. This is where we talk about all the stuff that we did fandom related during the week. I already kind of went first, but I have two. I didn't have one last week, so I'm counting backwards. But let's start with Kyle.
I saw a lot of movies this week. I saw 3 movies. I saw every movie that every person is about to talk about.
Okay.
But the one I'll talk about is Inside Out, because it just came out this past weekend, but it seems like everyone and their mother has already seen the movie, which is insane. And I think it was Pixar's smartest film. I wouldn't go so far as to say it being their best film. It wasn't my favorite film, but definitely their smartest. And what I mean by that is that it really gets you thinking, and it gets kids thinking too. And I think my roommate thinks that kids won't understand it, but I disagree. There was a kid who was like 2 rows in front of me, like at the end of the movie, who was like, "That was awesome," and like he wasn't confused or anything. So I don't know. It was amazing. And Selena, I know you haven't seen it yet, so I won't spoil anything.
Right, thank you so much. It's gonna be fun. It's gonna be a social experiment to see if I can avoid spoilers until August 27th, which is when this movie finally comes out here.
That's insane.
It's completely insane. But I'm so looking forward to this movie, though. And I'm so glad people are so positive about it.
It is great. I don't think I've only met one person who thought it was terrible, and that person is insane. So,
Do you want to shame them on this show?
Yeah, I'll just shame.
Oh, look at that! How relevant. That's great. How about you, Pam?
So, I go to the movies every week, pretty much. I spend way too much time at the movie theater. So this week I thought I would switch it up and go back to my roots and do a little music rec for you guys. Kacey Musgraves, who is actually a country singer, just released her second album, today. We're recording this Tuesday, June 23rd. So her album just came out this week, if you guys are listening, not on Tuesday. And it's really, really good. Don't be put off if you think, like, oh, it's country music. I don't really like country music. It's got a bit of a, like, it really does have an old country vibe. That's really how she's described. But if you're a fan of lyrics and lyricists, then you really need to check her out. No, I'm serious.
If you're a fan of lyrics.
No, because a lot of people, like, people listen to music for different things. Like, some people like the beat. That's why you listen to EDC. Right. Some people like, you know, pop, top 40, and that's maybe, you know, they're not, like, they are musicians, but they're not, like, musicians that kind of put themselves into every aspect. So Kacey Musgraves, she is, you know, she's a writer, and the album's really just about carving your own path in life, and she's really quick-witted with her lyrics, and yeah, I think you guys should all check it out. The single off this album is called Biscuits, and it's really good, so I should go listen to
is
that.
It, is yeah. it about biscuits?
It's about minding your own business, biscuits. So life can be gravy, you know?
Wow.
So.
That's brilliant.
She speaks the truth. And yeah, it's just really fun.
Wow, that's deep.
Yeah. Such lyrics.
She's actually,
no, I'm sure it's
she's actually kind of a rebel, though, in country music, because her first album, just because, like, you know, country music is so ingrained in just like the history of and stuff like that. So in her first album, she's like dropping things like, oh yeah, boys can kiss boys and girls can kiss girls, like everything that you would hear in top 40. Mm-hmm. But for country music, it's like that's something that'll get you shunned. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's interesting.
So the fact that, you know, she won like 3 Grammys off her first album, and she's really just taken the world by storm, and people are actually starting to listen and stuff like that, is a really big deal for that community and stuff like that. So I know it sounds like something that shouldn't be, you know, taboo, but for them it is, and so it's kind of cool to see somebody like her
that's
kind of take it by storm.
Really cool. So. And I am certainly a fan of lyrics. It's why I love people like Kate Nash and Kate Vogel and Ingrid McKeown and
Kate
all those
Nash.
People. Yeah, she's
Ingrid
great.
Michaelson.
They're
Selena,
all so great.
We need to talk about music.
Yeah. Is it Michaelson? See, I've been saying it wrong.
You have been saying it wrong.
Well, she never sings her own name, so how would I know?
Well, she should fix that.
Yes, that would be great lyrics. Anyway, so Marima, you went to the cinema. We've all been very, very good. I feel like since starting Hype, we're all like feeling the pressure to do stuff like this.
Yeah, I definitely didn't do it for Hype, but let's pretend like I did. I went and saw Spy, which stars Melissa McCarthy. I have to say, and I may have said on this show, that this movie looked really dumb, and I was thinking, I am not going to like this movie. I do not like these kinds of movies. I liked Bridesmaids, but I didn't think that Bridesmaids was like this revolutionary film that everyone seemed to think it was. Spy is amazing, guys. Everyone go and see it. It's hysterically funny. It also is like a sneaky feminist satire of spy movies, which you don't get until you're like halfway through
I'm
it.
I'm not going to watch it. Jeez.
Right. Well, this is gone. Like this is like Mad Max when you thought, oh, I don't want to see that. Everyone said, no, it's really famous. And you're like, oh, I want to see it now. So, yeah, Spy is amazing. For like one third of the movie, it's just Melissa McCarthy running around with Rose Byrne and Miranda Hart, who I love. Allison Janney is in it, which no one told me. All of these amazing lady actors. And Jude Law is also nice to look at. He was in it, and he was very funny.
Jude Law's American accent in that is just hysterical.
Yeah, I mean, I was literally, and I can't overstate, I do mean the actual definition of literally, crying with laughter at several points in this film.
Oh, wow. High praise.
Yeah. It's very, very good. So, you know, it's not perfect, of course, but I feel like Hollywood has finally worked out the kinds of roles to put Melissa McCarthy in, you know, because she's obviously fantastic and she's very funny, but she's had a couple misses, like Tammy, other things, but this is perfect for her. This is such a good vehicle for her, and there isn't like a single fat joke or anything in the whole movie, and stuff like that that you think, well, yeah, duh, but in some of the scenes you're kind of waiting for it, and there
that's
is a lot
really
of little
interesting. That's really good. I mean, that's you're not expecting that. So,
right,
wow.
There are a lot of little kind of subversions like that. So yes, definitely recommend. I went to it didn't have a lot of expectations, but I loved it, and I would probably even see it again. So there you go.
Well, great. I'm just going to wrap this up, how we hype, with saying that I went to see Jurassic World. Obviously, you all talked about it last week, so we don't need to have a whole other other discussion about it. I liked it. I thought it was good. I don't think I was as enthused as Andrew, like, in love with it, but it was entertaining, for sure. I watched it with my little brother, who was just blown away. I did want to bring up one thing, which I think I was just wondering if what you guys thought about it, because it's a little technical, but when I was like, every single scene in the movie I thought was really good, but like going from scene to scene, it's kind of like how I felt with Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. Like going from scene to scene, there was almost this like tension drop, which kept taking me out of the experience. It was really strange. Like, I don't know if anyone else felt this way, but like I enjoyed every scene, but every time it cut, I was like, huh. Like it was very strange.
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
I have, but okay, here's the thing. Like, I feel like I just purposefully turn my brain off when I go to the movies. Uh-huh. It's so bad, because like I really do, I'm one of those people that goes to the movies usually like as an escape. Like, even if I'm watching something serious, like my I'm a sucker for like period pieces or like World War II pieces. Like I try and immerse myself in the experience as much as I can, and then like wait to analyze until later, because if I'm analyzing like while I'm watching, like I feel like it just takes me out of the story and I completely I lose track of what's going on. So it takes some like something really big get me to snap out of it.
That's
so.
Kind of why I wanted to bring it up, because I thought it was like it only happened one other time, which was for Half-Blood Prince. So I just thought it was weird.
Yeah.
But I mean,
but what I was going to say is, like, you studied like film and stuff like that. Like, film is your passion, right? Mm. And so it's my best friend's passion too. So she's very much like you, where if it's like one little thing, like she's out and she's just like, this is weird. Like, I'm not in the movie anymore, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
So I wonder if it's just like the analytical aspect of you guys, because like you studied it so like intensely, and like that's something that you love, that you just like, if it's something like that like it like for the general viewer,
yeah,
might not, it's, you know, I think, and possible, I think we're more like the general consumer, to be honest with you guys. But Kyle, you said that you saw all of the movies that are on this list, right? So did you, were you more like Selena on this aspect, or?
No, I was just watching it like in a glaze. I was just, me and my friend were holding each other's arms the entire way. Like, there's a point where, I don't know, like all the scary parts, I can't talk, all the scary parts, I would hold her arm, and like we would talk to each other, like don't do that, don't do, no, no, don't do it, don't do it. And like,
oh, you guys would have been so annoying if I was sitting in your cinema. You would have had popcorn on your face. No.
Oh my goodness. So yeah, I wasn't. I guess I wasn't registering the entire. I have to see it a second time.
Oh, but I mean, I absolutely don't want to bring it down, because it was like, as I said, I did really enjoy it for an action movie. Like I watched the original Jurassic Park before this, so I picked up on a lot of the hints, because I'd never seen it before, and I thought like, the dinosaur. I mean, it's just people running from dinosaurs. I mean, what's not to like? I there were a few, again with the sort of analyzing. Maybe, I mean, I did the villain character. I thought he was like very cartoonish, you know, like sort of like twirling his mustache.
Yeah,
it was. But again, I mean, that kind of fit the mood of the movie. So
my realization was that the guy in charge of creating all the dinosaurs, not the main villain, but the other, like, the Asian villain.
He was really dumb.
Oh my goodness. He reminded me of, like, an Asian Steve Jobs with his black, like, his, like, black turtleneck and his jeans. And I was like, okay.
Interesting observation. Anyway, I think he was, like, the people obviously were the problem in that movie, which was kind of funny, you know, because they were like, what should we do? But it's, It was fun. I love it. Bryce Dallas Howard is fantastic, and Chris Pratt is fantastic, and I did have a great time, and my brother had a fantastic time, so it's happy I went to see it with him. So I suppose that wraps up how we hype. If you guys who are listening have seen any of the movies we talked about, or have seen any other great movies you think we should check out, or listen to music, I don't want to, you know, neglect that fun thing. If you're a fan of lyrics, then please write into us. And we look forward to hearing what you have to say. Moving on now to the news section. Ah, you know what, guys? I really wanted to be first this week. So when that Spider-Man news broke, I was in that dock at, like, the next minute just to add my name to it, because I was like, I have been waiting for this. So yes, the Spider-Man news, we're starting with that. Finally, Marvel and Sony have made a decision and have cast Tom Holland, a young British actor, in the role as Peter Parker. When they released the list of six finalists, there was another name on the list, which of course I'm blanking on. But he was in Charlie Rowe. He was in a Red Band Society. I thought he was intriguing. But now that they have picked Tom Holland, I personally, and I'm looking forward to hear what you guys have to say, but I actually think it's a really interesting choice. I've seen him in How I Live Now, with Saoirse Ronan. I really adore that movie, as strange as it is. And he plays the younger brother of the male lead, and he is just really good. I mean, all the kid actors in that movie are fantastic, but he struck me as being particularly good. And I think just in terms of his charm and his acting chops, he is really good. And Sony did say in the statement that his screen tests were, quote, special. And I can see where they're coming from. So I'm optimistic about this, you know, considering the choices we were told about, the fact that they're not going to do Miles Morales, the fact that they're not going to diversify. Now we've already discussed that to death. So now that we know they're not, I think this is a great choice.
I'm just not.
I can't talk.
I can't deal with this, but I'm going to, by the time this podcast comes out, there will definitely be an article in Hyperbole with my lengthy thoughts on Spider-Man.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, people can read that if they feel so inclined. But I would just say I haven't seen him in anything, so I can't judge his acting. I'm sure he's very good, or mm-hmm. they wouldn't have cast him at the center of what is the most popular superhero character, basically, ever. But I can't shake my disappointment with the direction that they're going in. And even though, as you say, like we've talked about it, it doesn't change how I feel about it. And it probably won't change how I feel about it up until and maybe even past seeing him as Spider-Man. Right. So, you know, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt as the actor. Like, I'm sure he's great for whatever it is they're going for. I'm just bored by it, and I'm disappointed in that direction, unfortunately, which is a shame because I actually love Spider-Man, although people may not feel that from what I usually talk about, but the character of Spider-Man, I do love a lot. So that is all I will say.
Yeah. Kyle, you wanted to say something?
No, not particularly. I'm interested to see what he's going to bring because of his young age. I think that should be interesting, but I have to make note, a lot of people have been tweeting about him, and a lot of people have been talking about this gigantic mole on his face, which, there's not a problem with that mole on his face. I think it's fine. It's like...
Oh, people are so shallow. Jesus Christ.
I know. I have plenty of moles on my face, and, like, I saw, like, one Tumblr post was, like, had collected all of the tweets about his mole, and they're like, Spider-Man doesn't have a mole, and I'm like, I would just
are you serious?
Yes,
that is the funniest thing.
And I'm like,
Spider-Man isn't British either. That's kind of a bigger issue if you're gonna make an issue.
And so I was like, y'all need to calm down. And then I looked up his Instagram, and he doesn't even have that mole anymore. Like,
okay, that's the best part of the story.
I know.
Like, Kyle,
Spider-Mole.
You know, Kyle, that's investigative journalism.
This is why they pay us the big bucks, guys.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
No, but you did a good duty for the fangirls, though, and the fanboys.
Yeah, right? I did. I had to look through several of his Instagram photos. It was such a chore.
Oh, no. Wow. Okay, well, mole aside, and nationality, and age, and all the other things that could potentially be an issue here, I think, you know, what Merima said, I mean, it's absolutely right. I mean, we were all sort of hoping for something new and different, but again, you know, I just want to say Tom Holland, as an actor, is really, really good, and really personable, I suppose, which is a really good word to use when you're talking about Peter Parker. So, I mean, again, I not speaking about Sony and Marvel and their direction at all, Tom Holland is great. I encourage you to check out his movies if you haven't seen any. How I Live Now is also just a general recommendation because I think it's great. So you could start there. So I suppose that's everything for Spider-Man until we get some more.
Now let's talk about Titanic. Oh my God.
Well, we're not really talking about Titanic. I was kind of shifting the mood. A little bit, because this is obviously very, very, very tragic story that we're moving into.
So, okay. Titanic is one of my favorite films of all time, if anyone does not.
Oh, my brother's too. It's my brother's favorite film of all time.
It is the best. And so, earlier today, or yesterday actually, we learned that the composer behind Titanic, James Horner, died in a tragic plane crash, which is terrible.
It's so horrible. Like, I read this just because these sudden deaths like this is just really hard to...
really tough, especially when it's someone whose work is behind such great stuff that, like, you definitely know, and for me, I find myself watching it, like, all the time, so it really, like, it didn't, like, strike a chord, and I don't mean that in, like, a bad way. Like, I wasn't, like, particularly just, like, heartbroken, but I was definitely saddened to hear that he had passed away. Mm. And he's also behind movies like Avatar and Braveheart and Jumanji as well. So he's had a lot of stuff. And the Titanic director, James Cameron, actually reflected on it and had some really great things to say. So if you guys are a fan of Titanic and you like the music, and you ever, if you ever sing My Heart Will Go On, like, you need to read what James Cameron said about it, because it was really touching.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And like yesterday I found myself watching Titanic like at the end of the night, and I was just like,
I mean, he did beautiful work, and I mean, I don't know, I don't know if you know this, I assume he was going to work on James Cameron for the Avatar sequels. Mm-hmm. And James Horner, I mean, he's done some. He did Braveheart, you know. He did Aliens. He did Jumanji. He did just Apollo 13. He did some absolutely beautiful, memorable scores. And I suppose for us, we can just be grateful that he was such a successful composer and that he got to put his touch on all of these iconic films. But the fact that he passed away in this sudden, very, very tragic way is just, it's very sobering, I think. And it obviously, rest in peace to him and thoughts to his family.
Okay.
Let's cheer up the mood a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, that is really sad. He both did amazing work. But moving on to slightly happier things for some people, I guess. It's John Green Fever once again. Let It Snow has been, we knew it was being optioned. Now we have a release date, December 9th, 2016. We are going to see an adaptation of Let It Snow on the big screen. Let It Snow, of course, is not written solely by John Green. It's a kind of anthology. It's got three stories, one by Green, one by Maureen Johnson, and one by Lauren Marco. And it's really cute. I don't know if you guys have read this. I've read it. It's very cute. They're kind of holiday romance themed stories, so I guess that's why they're releasing around Christmas. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. So I'm imagining this to be kind of like a teenage Love Actually, because the stories are a little connected, but not really. But, you know, with Love Actually, how they kind of have crossover characters. So that kind of thing.
Oh, fun. I'm more excited about it now. I love Love Actually, although New Year's Eve was horrendous.
Yeah, we pretend that like those ones don't exist. Yeah. Valentine's Day, remember that?
Valentine's Day was okay compared to New Year's Eve. New York.
Anything
Eve,
is okay compared to New Year's Eve.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. But Love Actually is fantastic. So if this is anything like that, and again, it's like Let It Snow, it's coming in December, it's going to be Christmassy. This is great.
And the script is by Kay Cannon, who wrote both Pitch Perfect films, which I know we're all big fans of. So there you go.
Nice.
Even better.
Should we move on to aliens, you guys? Are you excited for some alien-themed movie?
Sure.
News?
From snowmen to aliens, awesome. I feel like we're
because
in
I'm excited
Doctor
about
Who episode.
Well, it's like a Doctor Who episode.
That too.
So, Kyle... Titanic. Independence Day is something that was on heavy rotation in my household, probably because I have three brothers. And of course, the probably is familiar with this. The original came out in 1990 and starred Will Smith as the spider pilot that had to go up and save the world from destruction from these aliens. So they're making a sequel. Unfortunately, Will in this, which I think is a travesty, but Jeff Goldblum, Bill Pullman, and Judd Hirsch are all coming back to reprise their role. Independence Day Resurgence. So now we know the title of the sequel, and we also know what it's going to entail. Released all of this in a live stream event for fans, and this is what they had to say about what you can expect from the sequel. The director said, "We call the events of the original movie in the War of 1986. It's like a post-world generation that's unified, and that's amazing to see a world come together with a common enemy, and that's a reason." So it sounds like it's going to be a little bit more of the same, and kind of like a World War II to Independence Day's World War I. So it should be interesting.
Hmm. It reminds me of Edge of Tomorrow a little bit.
Yeah, kind of. So it's funny because like Liam Hemsworth is going to be in this movie. They don't have a Will Smith, so Liam Hemsworth is going to save them from aliens. And when he stars in this, you can expect to see him as kind of an orphan type character. So in his role, he said, "Jake's parents in the first attack. He grew up in the orphanage and eventually joined the military and became a fighter pilot and eventually became one of the best fighter pilots. I think his ego kind of got in the way. He made a bad decision and put someone's life at risk, and he got the great job of driving this moon tug, which is basically a forklift on the moon." So kind of filling the Will Smith role here with the scene. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this movie, but I'm kind of holding judgment until I see the first much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if you guys are excited, but I'm sure there's some Independence Day fans really stoked to hear about this.
I'm really worried. It seems like the aliens are cutting into your feed and making you sound all weird again.
Oh no.
Trying to block your signal, Pam. Oh no. Well.
No.
Well, let's hope it gets, maybe it'll get better.
It's fine. Just cut it out, I guess.
No, it's fine. Every time you said Will Smith, though, it cut out. I think that's very suspicious. So we should investigate that.
It's clearly, you know what? The aliens are really pissed off that he's not coming back to the sequel.
Yeah.
True. That's probably what
it's
it
what
is.
It is, clearly. No other explanation. But yeah, so a sequel no one asked for, but that doesn't mean it can't be good. So we'll have to hold judgment until we see it. Now moving on to some Pottermore news. Not at the beginning of the show because, you know, Spider-Man was kind of edged that out. But the final book in the Harry Potter series, Deathly Hallows, has debuted on Pottermore, which completes, of course, the series of interactive chapter books. And we've got a few new pieces of writing from J.K. Rowling. So the Deathly Hallows section, which you can go check out yourself on Pottermore.com, includes 15 moments for the final Harry Potter books, 37 chapters. And within those 15 moments, Andrew writes that 5 of them have new writing from J.K. Rowling. It's not a lot of new stuff from J.K. Rowling. But one of the things that we did get was her thoughts on the final Dursley moments in the story and why she didn't give Petunia a bigger moment at the end. Obviously, if you were in the Potter fandom when it was all big and exciting, you might remember that there was a lot of speculation about Petunia and Dudley, and that one of them might be the person who did magic later in life, which turned out to be nobody. And how Petunia might have some secrets about the Horcruxes, and sort of what we did end up getting, obviously, as Potter fans know, was just this kind of lingering look, Dudley, of all people, trying to be nice to Harry, and then they sort of just drove off into the sunset. And J.K. Rowling says that although some readers wanted more from Aunt Petunia during this farewell, I still think that I have her behave in a way that is most consistent with her thoughts and feelings throughout the previous 7 books. She had like a long forgotten, dimly burning love of her sister when she looked into Harry's eyes one last time, but that was pretty much as far as her affection went. So all around, Petunia was a rotten person. And that's pretty much the biggest takeaway from these chapters. Was there anything else you guys noticed that you wanted to bring up?
You know what's weird about Pottermore? I was going to say, what's weird about it is that I am really interested in all of this stuff, but for some reason, I just can't bring myself to go on Pottermore and see it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if it was in a book, I would
too.
Be all over
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah,
I would
exactly.
be like, this is so interesting. This is what is it about Pottermore that makes it so off-putting? I wonder.
It's all the work you have to do to get all the information. You have to click and click and click, and you have to like do this, this, and that. And it's like just ridiculous.
And then like when you're clicking, you're not in the mood to read this long block of text because you're clicking. You know, it's kind of like your brain wants to do 2 different things.
I thought it was going to be more interactive and fun. I thought there were going to be like more games. I thought there was going to be a freaking Patronus quiz or like something.
Will be, I'm sure.
But like, I remember sitting at my computer when J.K. Rowling announced Pottermore, and I was up at like 3 a.m.
Thanks, thanks.
I'm sorry, I can't do it. Oh, I can't do it.
We will never let you off.
We're excited.
I was really excited at 3 a.m. I was like waiting to sign up for it, you know? And like now it's just like I don't ever want to be on it ever because it's just so boring.
I think it's kind of more than that though, because when we were reading Harry Potter, ebooks were not really a thing. Like you read it in a book form. So for me, Harry Potter is just associated with going
books
and reading a book. You know? So I even get it when J.K. Rowling does interviews where she gives out extra information. Like, for some reason, even though it's still canon information, I'm less engaged with that than I am if I read it in a book. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you read Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, you're like, oh, this is so interesting. If she says, let me tell you about some dragons, I'm like,
exactly,
maybe later.
But I think it's also the way you want to explore the universe she's created, because ultimately what Pottermore does is it sets these bits of information up as these news stories, basically, as these, like, kind of like when we found out Moaning Myrtle's full name, and it's kind of like on their own now that the series has finished, the facts that were given are objectively speaking completely irrelevant. And actually there was a terribly negative article posted somewhere on another site that Andrew wrote a response piece to, saying that how J.K. Rowling should just stop like sharing new canon because it didn't matter. I totally disagree with that. I obviously, as Andrew does, we love hearing more about Potter, but I do think there's a point to be made that like each individual piece of information doesn't add up to a greater whole on Pottermore. because it's fragmented and it's divided, and it's like suddenly there's this huge thing about McGonagall that you have to take in, and then like 2 months pass, and then you get this in a book form, in a encyclopedia, which is obviously what we all want. You know, you can flip through it, you can reference, you can like read little bits about the characters you are most interested in. You can come back to it later and read about things you might not have found interesting. You can explore the lore. You know what I mean? Like it's there's a different feel of exploring a world that I don't think Pottermore gives you, unfortunately.
I agree with that.
Which is weird, because I think it's built to do that in a way.
It's kind of the irony of Pottermore. I feel bad for them.
If they had built Pottermore the way J.K. Rowling's original website had been built,
Rowling.
In which... I'm sorry, I can't just do it.
Look, I'm doing it so people don't write in and do it. It's for your own good.
It is for my own good.
And I also do this in person when I talk to you.
It's true. Yeah, it's true. When if they had made it like J.K. Rowling's website, where you would have to explore and you have to like solve these puzzles to find out like the book title and to find out all this stuff, I think it would have been way more engaging. I think, and that's what I thought it was going to be. I thought they were going to have like some sort of website like hers, where it was Hogwarts or something, or it was like Hogsmeade or whatever, you know, like. That would have been more entertaining. Is if you want us to work for the information, like that's fine. Make it fun. Make it like we have to figure out the puzzles and stuff. Like I totally agree, and I know what you mean with the fact that it would be more interesting in a book form. But I also feel like if they had done that with the website,
yeah, it shouldn't be just like click and click and click. Yeah. No, that's a good point.
I think it would have been so much more interesting. Like, I remember spending a couple of hours on her website trying to figure out that information, and I was happy to do it. I wasn't annoyed. I was like, this is great. So if they had done it like that, then it would have been a way more of a success.
Good point. Well, they tried something, and they're still trying something, so props to them, and we'll definitely be excited when the Patronus quiz hits. We know J.K. Rowling's written it, so it's going to be up there at some point. So that's the silver lining, I suppose.
See, that is the... I know you want to move on, but that is the stuff that should be on Pottermore, because, like, those are the things you can't get in an encyclopedia, right? For quizzes and things like that, that's what would drive traffic there. Anyway, someone needs to do an SEO thing at Pottermore.
Well, okay, so going from one big fandom to another, talking about Game of Thrones now, less wizard, more dragon. they're going to be at Comic-Con.
Not any more dragon, actually.
It's true. they're going to be at Comic-Con this year, which I think everyone expected. It's going to be great. They're going to be in Hall H at 2:30, and it's going to be fun. But I think the most interesting part of this story, which is why I decided to talk about it, is that a lot of actors are not scheduled to attend. Not saying that they might not end up being there, but Peter Dinklage, Emilia Clarke, Lena Headey, and Kit Harington are not scheduled to attend.
Oh, Kit Harington, it kind of makes
sense.
Yeah,
I mean.
But, like, it's very... I thought that was an interesting take to not have them show up. One of them, obviously, it makes sense. But to not include Peter and Emilia, I think, is
particularly... And the showrunners.
Particularly peculiar. Yeah, you know? And it's just going to be a really interesting panel, because they're going to have to talk about all this stuff that went down, and I don't know. It's going to be...
Maybe that's why they're not going to be there.
And I'm wondering how many angry fans they're going to get that line up to like ask a question, you know? Like, just like, imagine that...
questions, luckily, like, for them.
They're going to be facing a lot of... angry people this year.
I mean, yeah, it's funny, because the showrunners aren't going to be there. George R. R. Martin isn't going to be there. And the big three, if you will, like Emilia Clarke, Lena Headey, and Peter Dinklage, Maisie Williams and Sophie Turner will be there. But, I mean, I said this in the post as well. I think it's kind of nice that we're going to get to hear from some of the other people. Because when it's the big stars that always show up to big events, they're the ones that are going to get asked the most questions, and they're the ones who are going to get the most mic time. So I mean, Gwendolyn Christie is going to be there, Alfie Allen is going to be there, and David Nutter. If I was going, and I'm obviously going to watch the panel from home, I will find it interesting, maybe even more so than if I'd had the usual crew. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. I get it. Because people aren't going to be asking, like, they aren't going to be focusing all of their attention towards the main. Like whenever you go to a panel and it's like they open up questions to the audience, all the audience members always go for the big cast members. Basically what I'm saying is I know exactly what you mean.
Just sum up.
I can't talk today.
Oh, it's fine. It's but yeah, it's I think Game of Thrones fans are invested enough in this quote unquote secondary characters to find this interesting. So it's going to be great. I wish I was going.
Well, we go from excited fans to incredibly
we're
furious
just all
fans.
Over the emotional spectrum.
Yeah, we're taking you on a roller coaster ride today. Hannibal has been cancelled. Oh, guys. Hannibal has been cancelled at NBC. It's about 3 episodes into season 3. And they are pulling the show. It is so sad. It is so upsetting. I know I've talked about this before, but Hannibal is like one of the best shows on TV, and I know I don't seem to give it a great review because I, you know, haven't watched any of this season yet, but that's because I am bad at watching TV, not because Hannibal is bad at being a TV show. It's always like critically acclaimed. It is such a fantastic show. And unfortunately, Brian Fuller, the showrunner, does not have a great record with keeping shows on the air, not by any fault of his own. He, of course, is going to be going over to work on American Gods, which is Neil Gaiman's, the series adapted from his book that's going to be on Stars. But they definitely seem to be shopping Hannibal around at various places, and you know, he's been very positive on Twitter, on social media, saying like, let's just enjoy the series. They've obviously finished filming, so they've got I think another 10 episodes to go. They're going to enjoy the series and then see what happens, but I would be really surprised if it's not picked up somewhere else, actually, because it's not, so NBC doesn't own it, like they don't pay for it to be produced or anything like that. It's a separate production company, so you know, they have some flexibility in that, and also everyone loves the show. It's so pop, it's real. I mean, it doesn't get amazing. Yeah. It's weird because it, you know, it doesn't get amazing ratings, but yet it's always like the top TV show, or you know, near the top TV shows of critics and like kind of cult shows of each year. So yes, it's very sad. And you know, maybe NBC should not have canceled a show that the theme of which is literally eat the rude. That's their slogan. So I'm just saying, they could have, they've got some angry fans on their hands now.
That's funny. That's, and it's unfortunate. The lead character is Danish, the actor.
Yeah.
And he's like a big star. I remember watching his early movies here in Denmark. He's definitely, if you like him, there are some very interesting performances in his early work that you will probably enjoy. It's a shame. It's just a shame. I was listening to some Nerdist podcasts that were discussing just how amazing it is, basically, and how groundbreaking it is for network television, and to see it go. On the bright side, though, they did originally plan for 3 seasons, as far as I'm aware, so they're not.
Well,
I mean,
he
3
wanted
seasons
to have
is
a minimum of 3, but I think he has it planned out to about 7, because,
oh,
you know, there are a few books. Yeah, he said he wanted to do a minimum of 3. I think that was to get through Red Dragon, which is the book that they were dealing with.
Right.
But, yeah, yeah, everyone who watches it goes, wow, this is amazing. And then, whatever, NBC, you're so dead to me now.
Yeah. Oh, well, that it's such, let's hope someone picks it up. If nothing else, the Food Channel, they can relaunch it as this kind of like evil, like he's this master chef, and every time someone is voted off, he eats them. You know, I see it now. Yeah. It'll be great.
Yeah, that's a good incentive.
Right. But yeah, unfortunately for all the Hannibal fans, and we're keeping our fingers crossed that they'll pull a Mindy project and bring it back. So Netflix is all about their original series, and this new series is actually one that I'm probably going to check out, although I am still, insanely intimidated by all of their like binge shows that they've got on their site right now. Still making my way through Sense8. This one is called The Crown, and it stars Matt Smith, which is actually my primary reason for wanting to bring it up, because, of course, I love Matt Smith. It also stars Claire Foy and John Lithgow. The series will look at, quote-unquote, the inside story of the Queen and the Prime Ministers. It's funny because the Queen is Queen Elizabeth II, who is still alive, so I assume she... we're not looking at anything too scandalous or something that might be too revealing, but that doesn't mean this still won't be good. Andrew is branding it Netflix's Downton Abbey, which I think is pretty accurate. Claire Foy will play Queen Elizabeth II. Matt Smith will play her husband, Philip Mountbatten, the Duke of Edinburgh. And John Lithgow will play Sir Winston Churchill, which I just have to... raise a point of contention that which American decided that should be played by an American?
Yeah.
But then again, I guess, you know, Spider-Man is British, so it's an even trade-off. That was the only thing about the story that struck me as a little bit, but I'm not going to lie, I'm super intrigued by this.
I'm super excited. I love political dramas, so I think... this is going to be really awesome. Mm. And Matt Smith is one of my favorite actors.
Yeah, he's so good.
Super stoked to see this.
He's just so good. Like, I don't know. He's so intense and so nice. And so, like, he's just a fantastic actor.
I'm so incredibly happy that he's been able to find work and be seen seriously as an actor, not just as a doctor, you know? I'm just... super happy.
I am an actor, not a doctor. That's yeah. Yes, nicely phrased.
Okay, we go back to NBC, this time a little cheerfuler. Although, you know what? No, NBC, I still hate you because you cancelled Smash as well and you had nothing to do with this. So I retract all of that. But exciting news for Smash fans. Of course, Smash was cancelled by NBC after mm-hmm. two seasons. But Bombshell, which was the show within the show, is coming to the Broadway stage. And they actually did a one-night concert performance of Bombshell for charity. They have done a concert performance of Hit List, which was the other show within Smash. But now it looks like they're actually going to turn Bombshell into a proper Broadway musical, which is so exciting for Smash fans because, you know, the one frustrating thing about Smash was, for those who don't know, the show basically showed them putting together this musical from, like, the first, you know, the creators like writing the book and writing the music up until Tony Knight. And the whole time you're like, but I just want to watch the whole show, you know, because you just see songs here and there. So, you know, the major thing that it needs obviously is a book because we didn't really see a plot or, you know, we didn't really see the full book on the show because they mainly showed the musical numbers. But we don't know anything about casting or anything like that, but the show had an amazing cast, so I think people would definitely be keen to see some of those characters and those actors come back because a lot of them are like, well, they are all Broadway actors, like they came from the stage, so there isn't any reason why they wouldn't at least be considered for it. Mm. And it would be really tough coming into that, I think.
What's her name, the blonde one? She's like a legit
Megan Hilty.
Yeah, Megan Hilty. She's a big Broadway star. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Christian Bale as well, and Bernadette Peters was in it. Like, it's amazing. It was an amazing cast, and the show is just the dumbest and best show you've ever seen.
It was such a good show. Hypable used to do a Smash Chat, which I used to listen to. It was just a really good show. Like, again, such a shame it was canceled. I'm excited for this, and it's glad to see these projects sort of unexpectedly finding new life because this fan support, you know, stops them from dying out completely.
Yeah, I think now people will want to see them do the Hit List, which was the other show, because Bombshell was kind of the traditional big Broadway show, and Hit List was more like a rock musical,
it was season two, right?
A Spring Awakening. Mm-hmm. It's like a Spring Awakening style show versus Bombshell was like your trad Broadway. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess if this goes well, maybe we could see Hit List on the horizon, but it's exciting news all around.
Definitely. So it's sort of vaguely on the topic of music. Pam, are you around? Did the aliens
get you? I'm here. I was just keeping quiet in case they came back for a second round.
Well, you sound fine, so go ahead.
All right, so that's good. I'm going to get this fixed so that they don't commandeer my microphone again. So we told you guys about Apple Music, which is pretty much iTunes' response to online streaming that Spotify, even like Jay-Z's Tidal, is attempting to do. Everybody was really excited about this free trial you were going to get on June 30th when the program officially launches. Everybody except Taylor Swift, who took it upon herself to write a very eloquent open letter to Music talking about how she didn't think it was right that they were not offering to pay musicians for the 30 days that listeners were going to get for free. And in her letter, she said, "I find it to be shocking, disappointed, and completely this historically progressive and generous company not to offer some kind of payment for artists' work." Now, it should be that Taylor was not speaking specifically about her own music. She kind of very took the approach of saying that she was writing this for everybody that was afraid to speak up, the smaller artists that were just kind of just starting out that really do need the money. And so in talking about that, she said, "This is about the new artist or the band that has just released and will not be paid for its success. This is about the young songwriter who just got his or her first cut and royalties from that would get them out of debt. This is about the producer who works tirelessly to innovate and create like innovators and creators at Apple are pioneering on their field, but will not get paid for of a year's worth of plays on his or her songs." Mm. And Apple was really quick to respond to this. About 12 hours later, they released a they agreed with Taylor's letter and that they were going to make sure that everybody got paid for the 90-day free trial that everyone is going to get on Apple Music. So this is a big deal because it kind of shows how much power artists can. It should also be noted that 1989 is still kind of up in the air as far as whether or not Apple Music will be allowed the rights to let people stream it. She has notably just kind of pulled it from every streaming service, kind of. So even though she won this big battle against, you know, a corporation, it's not on Tidal.
Okay.
It's not. As far as I know, her back catalog is on Tidal, but 1989 has not been released on any online streaming service. So she's still holding back. So it's kind of like remaining to be seen if maybe she decides that Apple Music is the one that she's going to let people actually listen to it on as soon as people are allowed to pay for it, but nothing is really set in stone. So that's pretty much all I love Taylor Swift. But I'd love to hear his thoughts.
You guys. Yeah, I do. You know why? Because, I mean, I love Taylor Swift because I love 1989. It's like such a good album. But also I love that she has this, you know, principled approach to streaming and she's like my age. It's so annoying. she's like a couple years older than me, and she's basically, you know, changing the way that this huge corporation goes about their business. I really like what she said about, you know, she's saying she understands it's not about her, and people will say, "Oh, what does it matter to you? You know, you can afford it." But it is, you know, that is a real issue with streaming services. I think the amount of revenue that artists actually get from it, I mean, it's an issue across like all of music, the amount of money that artists get from it versus the studios. So, you know, she has the power to do something about it, and she's done it, and I admire her for doing that.
Yeah, I think it goes a lot. It says a lot about what you can do if you just take a stand. And just the fact that Apple like had listened to her and like had read her post and reacted several hours later. It wasn't even that they waited a week or anything. This all happened in one day. Like, she posted this blog on Tumblr, and then the guy on Apple responded to her at like 8:30 that night. Like, it's incredible. So I think it goes to say a lot about the fact that like, if you're unhappy with something and you think that it should be changed, like go out and like take a stand for it. 'Cause you never know who's listening and who will actually make something happen.
Oh, it also helps if you're like one of the best-selling. Yeah,
well, exactly. I mean,
if you're one of the best-selling artists in the world, yeah, you can make a change.
Otherwise,
I mean, other people should also feel inspired, also. But you know,
I was going to say also beloved by millions, because I don't think Beyonce could have. You know, I mean, everybody loves Beyonce, but I really don't think she could have gotten away with
not after the title thing.
She's like, she's America's sweetheart, you know. So it doesn't even matter if she was one of the, you know, tens of artists that signed the title pact or whatever they did when they announced it. Like, I think she still could have been the one to do this, because people love her. She's on top of the world, and everybody wants to be her best. So.
And unfortunately, I mean, it's sort of comes whenever you're talking about like the big guy speaking up for the little guys, like it, you do. I mean, it's of course people are going to have a bit of a backlash and saying, you know, why are you saying that, you know, like you were saying, Pam, like this doesn't affect you. Why are you saying this? But ultimately, as you pointed out, sometimes the person who actually has a platform is the one who needs to take a stand. And Taylor Swift certainly has that platform, and good on her, and good on Apple as well. I think people are sort of being like, oh, Apple, you know, but they listened and they changed, and that's great. That's the way you make progress. So great story.
I just wanted to talk about this just because I think it's so awesome. Gmail launched a new feature this week. It wasn't really like new, but I'll talk about that in a bit. That will let you unsend an email, which is amazing. I think we've all had a moment or two in our lives where we're like, we send an email and we're like, crap. And so
yeah, you can't edit emails.
Yeah, like so this feature, once you click send, it'll wait for a period of 5, 10, 20 or 30 seconds, depending on what you choose, and it won't actually send it until after that period of time is over. So you have a couple of seconds to kind of just like think about it and like look at it and be like, wait, no, like, never mind.
This is why I literally, like, if it's an important email, I'm sitting on it for, if not like at least a day, then a couple hours. But even then, like, this feature is great, but you guys, I need like 5 minutes.
I don't need, like, 30 seconds is too quick. Like, I need way longer.
Yeah, have like 20 days. But exactly. I mean, but the thing is, it's just I mean, I know it's kind of been around for a while and stuff, but this is just, I mean, because it's, I know, great. That for me and for a lot of people, like, you write something, it's in draft mode. You look at it with totally different eyes than you'll look at it once it's posted. And now I'm just talking more about articles and hyperbole, but like, I don't see my mistakes until the post has gone live. And then I see them all, and then I fix them. But it's weird.
It's not just that. This is also good for, like, I'm not kidding. This is so funny, the timing of this. I have received at least 4 emails this week that I should not have gotten because someone accidentally hit reply all instead of reply. This is also good in those situations where you're reading it thinking, I should not have read this.
Actually, you know what? If we're talking about, like, email, because we get, obviously, like, we're in the press, so we get a lot of emails from PR people. It's super, like, I get anxiety for the person who sent it. When you get an email that was clearly a mass email that they tried to personalize, but they forgot maybe that you are with Hypeable and not another website. Or a website I used to intern at. So yeah, it's pretty awkward. And so in situations like this where it's like, I feel like this is going to benefit the intern that has to write all these press releases up for everybody else.
Absolutely. And the cool thing is that I think this really shines a light on Google Labs settings, Labs features, because it was available on Google Labs for a couple of years, actually. And everyone, I think, I'm pretty sure almost everyone has access to Google Labs, in which they can turn on and off special beta features like this. This was in beta for 2 years. So it just goes to show you that if you use Gmail enough and you don't know about this, you can just go to settings and then go to your Labs section and like see all these features that you can like test out before they officially unveil them for everyone, which is what they did with this. So it's super cool, super awesome. I love tech. I just got a job working for tech, and like, I can't talk about tech enough.
Well, that's good. That's awesome. And a nice way to end the show, you know, with a Google fandom. And end the show. God, guys, I'm sorry. ready to get out of here, clearly. Of course, we still have a few more segments to get to. And the first one is TV show of the week. And now I'm going to start by breaking the rules because I'm going to talk about TV show of last week because I wasn't here. The Game of Thrones finale rolled around full of surprises. Again, this is something you all discussed last week. I think the benefit of bringing it up again this week is that it's, you know, a week has passed, so we can actually talk about what happened a little bit. I guess just initial thoughts for me, I thought parts of it were really good. I enjoy everything with Daenerys. I always have. I think it's fantastic. And obviously her journey is now at where it is in the Dance with Dragons, which means next season exciting stuff is going to happen with her that we have no, you know, we don't really have any clue what's going to happen now that she's like all alone with another Khalasar. It's like, is this season one? What's happening? That was a weird development, but I'm excited to see where that goes. The thing that sort of left me a little bit sad was that they chose to end the season with that big death as they did, because it was like, can I say it? I need a yes or no.
I think it's been a couple. I think so, but okay. That's just...
So angry commenters, Kyle.
Just stop listening.
Yeah,
skip forward. If you haven't seen Game of Thrones at this point, like, it's kind of your fault.
Okay, well there you go.
Blame me. Send the hate mail to me, not Selena. Yeah.
So as happened in the books, Jon Snow sort of met his untimely demise, and I was like, I felt so bad for. I know people were really upset about this, but when that happened, I was just maxed out on like death sympathy after the last two couple of episodes. Like I was totally underwhelmed by his death. Also because it happened so suddenly and out of nowhere. And I was like, if they had saved this for like the season six premiere, like if season six had opened with this, it would have been like, what the.
Oh, you know, I agree.
Expletive. Completely. And I would have just, personally, I mean, I know a lot of people were, like, totally, like, floored by it, and that's fantastic. Personally, I would have loved for him, being such a big character as he was, to have a whole episode to himself kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, I agree completely. I was completely underwhelmed by that. Like, when it happened, I was just sitting there, like, okay. And then I go on Facebook, and everyone's like, why? And I'm like, and then it's even more underwhelming when you, like, after the fact, when you read up on all the articles and, like, as a non-book reader, like, you just, like, learn about all these things that happen, like, with people resurrecting the dead and Melisandre returning to the wall. And it's just like, all right, well, like, now it just feels like he's just going to come back. Like,
yeah. And if, like, I mean, I hope he does, because I'm a fan of him, so.
Me too. But that whole thing just makes it even more underwhelming in the end. Like, if it had happened in the season six premiere, like you had suggested, I think it would have been way more hard hitting.
Yeah. Also, because then there would have been that thing like, oh my god, they just killed off a major character in the first episode. Is he off the show? Oh my god, oh my god. And then like a few episodes would pass and you wouldn't know. And then if he came back, it would have been like, whoa. But now we like all have this time to form all these theories and it just kind of takes the edge off, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad we think the same way.
Yeah, we should disagree. God,
I know.
But no, it was. But I mean, I suppose from that final sort of thing, I thought a lot of interesting things happened. Again, compared to the previous like episodes 8 and 9, I sort of felt like 10 was a little bit less than what it should have been. The only thing that I would say that I thought was absolutely fantastic was the Walk of Shame, like Lena Headey's performance. And I know she was pregnant at the time, so part of that performance is a body double who deserves a lot of credit as well, but completely Emmy-worthy, just spectacular. Definitely a highlight in terms of acting, I think, of the season. I'm sort of a little bit like, five seasons in, and it's kind of treading water a little bit, I think it's fair to say. But you know, who knows? Another year, another season, and we're caught up with the Dance with Dragons, so basically everything is new territory from here. And that's all I have to say about that.
Meanwhile, I'm obsessing over Orphan Black.
Meanwhile.
Orphan Black just ended this past week, and it was astounding. I say that, I think, every time I talk about Orphan Black, but it just goes to show you how amazing it is. I may sound like a broken record at this point, but the finale really changed the stakes a lot and kind of twisted the show, and it makes next season even more of a mystery because they brought back this organization that we haven't seen since like season one, and it's just, it's astounding. And I think the cool thing about Orphan Black is that since season one, season two, everyone's been curious about like the original and who the original is and like what's going on with all the clone stuff, and like they gave us answers to that a lot quicker than we had, than I would have anticipated. So I'm not going to say anything about who it is or anything, obviously, because it only just finished last week, but it was a great episode. And I think for those of you who don't watch Orphan Black yet, for some reason, go and watch it because it's great.
I have to confess something. I try to watch.
No.
I do. But the thing is that I keep like, I don't know. Like, I love the character. Like, all of her characters are spectacular. And Felix. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm a few episodes into season two. And I just like, there's something about the show. I wanna like it so bad. And I like parts of it, but the ongoing mystery just does not do anything for me. Like, the whole religious cult and the science people, and like, there's no, like, I'm struggling to why, with some of these things, like, why I should care. You know what I mean? Like, it's really strange.
Yeah.
Because I love parts of it, and other parts I'm just completely uninterested, and I keep being like, oh yeah, I really need to catch up. And then I'm like, ugh, but, you know, what's his face with the, like, part-time love interest, whatever, and Rachel, and like, and the religious cult with the mouth, and it's just gross, and it's like, I really want to keep going, because I believe that there is probably some greater agenda that is worth uncovering,
but
the mystery part of it at the moment isn't getting me at all.
I think season two is particularly weird because they spend a lot of time on the religious cult and the Prolethians and all of that, and I think it comes to a satisfying ending in the finale for season two.
Well, that's good to know.
Think. And and season three introduces a whole new set of players, I think, which reinvigorates the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've sort of been a little bit spoiled on that, so I'm just waiting for that. I
think once you get to season three, you'll be a lot more interested in what's going on, especially with what happened in the finale. I think I don't know you like that well to know like for sure if you'd be into it after season three, but I think you might like it a lot more, and you might look forward to season four as much as I am.
I think you should at this point. as you know, I'm a big fan of the short-lived, highly underrated show Dark Angel, and there was some cloning stuff going on in there as well, and I was so intrigued by it. I think cloning stuff is incredibly fascinating, so you know, I'm gonna keep trying, and I'll let you know I feel.
Good.
All right. It's my turn. I'm so excited,
yes,
you guys.
It is. Yay,
I know
I'm excited.
Kyle's like the only one on this panel right now that's as excited as I am, because you guys, my Mad Fat Diary finally came back. And the problem with British shows is that they're so great, but the seasons are so short that sometimes you have to wait like over a year to get your show back, which I'm sure Sherlock fans will understand. So this is what Kyle and I go through when my Mad Fat Diary is off the air. And it's only six episodes long, which is just terrible. Anyway, so it returned a couple days ago, and it's just so wonderful. And if you guys haven't given this show a shot yet after Kyle and my just like open love for it, then you definitely should.
Well, I would if I was available to me.
Oh.
I think that especially considering that, you know, the demographic on Hypeable sometimes is a little bit younger, a lot of kids that are maybe like looking into going to university or are trying to or struggling with like making decisions on that matter, I think that they're really going to relate to this season because main character is kind of going through similar struggles on top of just all the outlandish things that tend to happen to her. So it's just a great start to a final season because this is the last season we're going to get. So I'm really enjoying it. Yeah. Did you watch the first episode? Did you like it?
No, I have. Okay. I haven't seen it yet because
oh my gosh.
I decided I was going to watch it today, but then I randomly decided to drive up to San Francisco. So like, I'm probably going to watch it tomorrow.
Well, I can't wait to hear what you think because I laughed and then I was in anguished pain and it's a great first episode for season three. And yeah, if you guys are into it or if you watched it because Kyle and I just can't stop talking about it, be sure to tweet us because we're more than happy to talk about this show that we love with you guys.
Yes, please tweet us.
Tweet us.
Okay. Yeah, that's the listener challenge of the week. And finally, this is cool. I wrote this up on Hypeable yesterday just for you, Mirma.
You wrote it up before I put it in here.
No, I didn't.
Oh, really? No. Okay, well, so my show of the week, and really my show of every week, although I can't talk about it every week because I feel like that's an unwritten rule, is Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, which I have talked about before on Hype, but I wanted to mention the most recent episode in particular because every time I feel like I can't love John Oliver anymore than I already do, he does something and it just, I fall more and more in love with his brain and his show. The reason I wanted to bring it up was because on his most recent show, he talked about the internet. Hey, that's a thing we all have in common.
What?
And he talked in particular about online harassment, particularly of women on the internet, which I feel like is something we haven't, it's not really relevant to what we talk about on Hype usually, but it is a big part of, you know, being online just in general, which is obviously a thing that we all enjoy in a way we all communicate. So yeah, he does these amazing segments that are really insightful and really in-depth and convey a lot of information and are still really funny. And this whole show really, Sunday night show, was very feminist heavy because at the start he talked about women being on the $10 bill in America as well. So I was just all over this because, guys, I'm a feminist. The secret is out.
And, are you serious? You've been hiding that so well, man.
I know, right? it's just I definitely recommend. He covers a whole range of topics, and obviously this one is one that's a little more relevant to Hypeable and, you know, being involved in online fandom and online culture. So I thought this would be a good time to bring it up. But really, I just want everyone to watch it all the time.
It's
my favorite show. Yeah.
It is just so good. I'm watching it every week as well. And I just think it's his way of just bringing these huge, huge, important, relevant topics, like making them accessible to the world. It's obviously an American show, but he's talking about both American and international news. The stories that he and his teams like pick out every week are so important, and there's such a great mix of entertainment and sports and politics and wars and just it is. I mean, obviously you need to be getting your news from a variety of different sources, but this is definitely like for a reality check and just no BS. This is just incredible. He drops some serious truths. Like, it's great.
I think also if you're a listener of Hype, you would appreciate it because there are a lot of pop culture references often throughout the show that he kind of throws out. So I sometimes wonder about the exact demographic of who's watching this. Because,
Hashtag millennials.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a lot of fun. So yeah, you should definitely check it out if you're not watching it already. You know, mature content, so judge for yourself if that's appropriate. I don't know how old people are who listen to this. Hopefully not that young.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say you're probably good.
Okay, so that's it for TV show of the week. Time to do Hot on Hypeable. First of all, as you may have heard last week, I got really, really, really excited about the possibility of a Princess Diaries movie for all about 6 hours, and then they said, JK guys, we're definitely not doing this. But in my high of elation, I wrote up about three plots that we would like to see if they did actually go ahead with it, and one that we would not like to see. And I just wanted to share that because I am obsessed with Princess Diaries, and I would like everyone to join me in that obsession. I also, quick plug, I guess, I've also finished reading the other Princess Diaries book. I don't think I had read that last time, or finished reading it last time. And definitely recommend. It's called Royal Wedding. So people check that out. Okay, the theme for this week's Hot Unhypable is fun, not serious. Mm-hmm. I feel like often we talk about a lot of the serious articles that are up on Hypable, and we still have plenty of those, but I just wanted to plug some of the more lighthearted features that we had going this week. If you want to read some heavier topics, some longer reads, you can always check them out in the features section. But of course, we had Inside Out came out last week, so we had a lot of fun things for that. First of all, we have all of the Inside Out Easter eggs. We found some to get you started, and then other people are sharing theirs in the comments, so that's a lot of fun. But make sure you only go over there if you have seen the movie, because there are some spoilers. So Selena, stay away from that one. We also have a ranking of all of Pixar's animated shorts, not the films themselves, but the little shorts that go in front of them. And people who have seen Inside Out will know that there is an adorable short film at the start of it called Lava. Actually, oh, good, I can talk about this now. When I saw Inside Out, like, I don't know, quite a while ago, I remember I said on Hype that the lady volcano was weird, and I was bothered by the lady volcano. I was wondering, yeah, Kyle and Pam, if know what it I'm annoyed, talking about now.
It annoyed the crap out of me.
Yeah, I was, oh my God.
Yeah, you're like, why is the other volcano, he's just allowed to be a volcano, and then the lady one has to be like a woman?
Like, why does she have hair?
Why does she have lips?
A neck and a face?
Guys, she's a woman. She's defined by her looks.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
haven't
know.
You been...
No, no.
Did you think so, they just should have been like, just like volcanoes that had no, yeah, just two random volcanoes.
I liked him. Like, he looked like a volcano with the mouth, and that was fun, and it was funny. And the song was so cute. I was a big fan of the
show. Oh, I see what you're saying. But she
was like a woman,
a doll,
who happened to be. Yeah.
So she looked like someone made out of stone.
You know what?
They should have had the same one as the dude, but with like a little bow on her head or something. Just to be like
I just assumed, to be honest with you, that like she looked that way because she was a young volcano, and then after a couple of eruptions she too would look like the guy volcano.
Okay, then I have a separate question, which is, why do volcanoes in Hollywood have to conform to these weird standards of age gaps? Where like George Clooney's love interest is like a 25-year-old, why does this old volcano get this nice spry young volcano? He should be hooking up with some old lady.
You know
volcano.
What? Bottom line, I was just really happy that this ended happily, because for a while I really thought we were both going to end up old and alone, and that just hit way too close to home.
I love how we were discussing this about volcanoes.
No, I'm serious. Like, I was I was a little depressed for a minute there, and then they just turned it all around, as you do.
Well, now that's spoiled for me.
This was meant to be the font, not serious, and I've just turned it into a discussion of volcanoes and fans. Okay, back to being fun. I can totally
This is fun. No, what you're talking about.
We have a quiz on Hypable of which Pixar film is your spiritual home. Did any of you guys take this?
Yes.
What did you get?
Toy Story.
Oh,
I guess it means I'm a child inside.
I got Ratatouille, I'm assuming, because I just clicked on cheese for every answer.
Wherever
I could.
What decade are you from? Cheese.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, where's the cheese option? I don't understand. And then we have one more. This is a fun new thing we're starting on Hypable. This is Your Take, where you can rank the movies. So we'll give you a ranking of something. So for this, we are doing the Pixar movies. And then you go into the comments and give us your ranking, and everyone can like share and discuss, and it's a fun time. So yeah, I want to know what everyone's top Pixar movie would be. Andrew put Toy Story 3.
Oh, mine is Up.
Yeah, I would go with The Incredibles. That's so underrated.
That is so good too. But it's just it's so like Up is more recent in my memory. Up. You know, but it's like looking at this list, like Pixar just like owns everything. Yeah, like I love like, it. And I actually want
to like they can keep that one.
Yeah, except that one. And I actually think, you know, people give Brave a lot of flack, but I thought it was cute. I liked it.
I love
yeah.
Brave.
Mm.
Kyle and Pam, do you have a what would be the top? Do you have a fave?
Either Toy Story 3 or Inside Out. I can't pick.
Mine's a tie between Toy Story 3 and The Incredibles.
Mm. Yes, Incredibles.
It's a toss-up. Yeah, definitely a toss-up between those two. Up is like number 3, though, but only because I can't watch that movie. It makes me cry too much.
Like, I just love it. Really, I just love the idea of like that second chance, you know, that life is never over. Like it's just
literally watched that movie the dogs. Once, and I just you know, and in World of Color, because you know, Marima and Kyle, you have both seen World of Color. The part with Doug makes me cry every time. Every time I see that show,
that part isn't that's the in part. Anymore, so it won't make you cry.
Well, thank God. Every time I'm just like, don't do it, Pam. Don't do it. Don't cry. And then Doug, because he's like, I don't know you, but I love you, and I'm just like, no, stop it. It's terrible.
Oh my God. Okay, all right.
Okay,
that's it for Pixar. We've become weirdly emotional about it. And then a couple other fun things to plug. I mentioned before about the $10 bill in America, how they're going to put a lady on it. So we thought, let's think of some fandom ladies who would be good on it. And I'm not just plugging it because Leslie is totally winning and I totally read about her. Although I think she's at like 32%. The next one's at about 15%. Not that I'm bragging. That's just an objective.
She's the only one who legitimately belongs on there.
Like, I mean, or mine is the best. Either
or
of those
that.
Things is
or
true.
That.
Yeah, and then also Danielle wrote a really fun article about Jurassic World, which is how to throw a dinosaur party according to Jurassic World, which is a lot. But you do need to have seen the film to understand the jokes in it.
Okay.
So once you've seen,
I thought you were going to say you do need to have a dinosaur.
Yes, like, that is a requirement. BYO dinosaur, and this is how you throw a party. And that's it for Hot on Hyperball, but as always, you can find these and more features on hyperball.com in our features section. Cool. Thanks.
Awesome. Okay, so final segment of the show is listener feedback. We had some great feedback across the board. We're going to bring up a few of them on the show now because we're running super long. So the first one, if you want to get that, Kyle?
Yeah, the first one is, oh God, I can't say
it. Here's a test for you.
Her handle is T and Toastify. So she says, I honestly can't say enough good things about Hypeable Hype and Millennial Show. Why did I say that?
Millennial Show.
Both podcasts have now traveled around Thailand with me. Well, I'm jealous that you're traveling around Thailand, so that's awesome. And thank you
for
bringing
us
with you. Yeah.
We had a great time. thank you. And as I said on Twitter, we really want to be a favorite Ingeborg, so let us know what we can do to change that. You know, there's the Danish factor, I'm just saying. we will brighten up.
That's right. There are no international hosts on Millennial.
That is
and
true.
And do they talk about volcanoes? I don't think so. I'm just
highly doubt it.
Yeah.
So, if she's clearly a fan of volcanoes, we're in.
So great. Thank you. Thank you so much for that comment. And Pam, do you want to
take the next one?
Exactly.
Sure. All right. So Max Den Hartog says, please discuss Orphan Black season 3 on this week's episode. The finale was amazing, and this season has been really good. Your wish has been granted, Max.
You are welcome.
Kyle on. Yes, you're welcome.
Millennial Show did not do that for you.
Right. Remember this when it comes time to pick faces, children.
Not that we're competitive.
Not at all. All right, and the final comment, Marima?
Yeah, this comes from Jess Chaplin, who said, just finished Ready Player One and loved it. Thanks for the recommendation.
Yay!
Have any of you read Invasion of the Teeling yet? First of all, you're welcome for Ready Player One. I like that we're slowly converting to read this book. We should definitely talk about it at some point. Invasion of the Teeling is the second book in the Queen of the Teeling series. I have not read it yet. I know a couple people on Hypeable staff have, but I'm going to be doing some traveling in the next couple weeks, so I might maybe download it to read on the plane. I didn't mind the first book. I didn't love it. I felt like it was overhyped. So that's where my hesitation has been. But if you have read it, then you should let us know what you thought, because that might change my mind.
And I loved the first book, so I'm really looking forward to the second one. I'm going to buy it next week, I think. So.
Well, you can report back too.
Yeah, bring it up on a future hype.
Yeah.
And that wraps up episode 54 for this week. We hope you all enjoyed the show. And as always, and thank you again so much for all of your comments. We really, really appreciate the feedback. If you do want to leave comments about this podcast episode or the show in general, you can go to hypeable.com, which is hypable.com. You can also tweet us at hypeablehype. And I think we should, I'm going to put up that single, the Biscuit song you talked about earlier in the show, Pam, so people can listen to it.
Put up the music video. Yeah, the music video is really fun, actually.
And of course, our Instagram. Now, as you all know, Comic-Con is drawing ever closer. It's in a couple of weeks, and I expect our Instagram to get a lot more busy at that time. So we'll see if that actually happens.
Thank you,
Marima. And I have an iPhone now, so I can put stupid stuff, but I'm not sure I'm gonna. We'll have to wait and see. And as always, we would really appreciate it if you head on to iTunes and leave us a rating and a review, because again, those ratings, obviously, then they will help us get discovered by other people, and we are trying to spread the word about the show. So as Tesco says, every little helps. There you go, my British friends. With that, I guess there's nothing left but to say goodbye. My name is Selena.
I'm Pamela.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Marima, and that's definitely the first time we did that.
That is, for sure. Yay! The first time we did that. We are pros at the naming game. It's funny that, like, we can't put, like, our names. It's the easiest. My name is Selena.
My name is Pamela.
Is it? What list are we going from?
I'm the one at the top.
I'm always lost. I just assume I'm lost. Okay. We'll have to do that over.
I love how this never works out.
It's Selena, so, you know what? It's Kyle, and then it's Pamela.
But don't you, can you just say, anyway, it's not important.